I'm Richard Dugan, your host for Tell Me Your Story, and we come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live on the internet at richarddugan.com. We archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, and we thank you so much for joining us. And this is our third consecutive visit on an Easter Sunday to visit with Swami Vidyadishananda in his monastic home in the Montecito area. You are the founder, if I'm correct, of the Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship?
Yes, I'm the spiritual founder.
And as we've shared before in previous interviews, and we're going to get to our subject matter in a moment, I kind of use the analogy that you are associated in a lineage capacity or a fashion with Paramahansa Yogananda as far as your sort of two different branches of the same tree, as it were. So you have a lineage that is similar and then branches at one point, but you share the same kind of message.
Yes, you can say that. Even though the non-profit organization Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship has a slightly different mission, mm-hmm. it's from a mission in Sanskrit known as Swamahiman mm-hmm. mission. The mission is kind of global, rooted in India, and it is more Sanskrit-based and Sanskrit language and Sanskrit philosophy-based. And there are about a team of 10 monks, but mostly five or six are very heavily involved in the mission. But the nonprofit is the U.S. branch to establish the legacy of that mission. And as part of that nonprofit, we teach several meditation techniques, and I'm affiliated to the lineages of those meditation techniques, and that's where the crossover and the affiliation with the Kriya Yoga, because I'm trained also in the mountain where Kriya Yoga has been practiced since a long time and has been revived from that mountain in the Himalayan mountains. And so my connection with Paramahamsaji, Paramahamsa Yogananda and Paramahamsa Hariharananda is through the Kriya Yoga lineage and Kriya Yoga teachings. But my training is a little bit more traditional mm-hmm. and more in the mountains and more with the Sanskrit-based lineages who also are scholars in addition to being mystics and yogis. Mm. So this is what we had partly touched upon in the previous interviews, so I just wanted to give you a recap.
Well, and there are those who have not heard those interviews yet, and they certainly can do so. We have them up on the website, and we also have a link to your website so people can find out more about the Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship and you and the mission and the work that you're doing and the people who are involved, and if they should choose to do so, get involved themselves. You also give talks on the Central Coast, and you also make pilgrimages pretty regularly back to India.
Yes, every year, because our monastic council meets and they usually wait for me once a year to be part of that monastic council meeting and to review that we are on track and to review the publications and the review the paradigm and review the teachings and make sure that we stick to the authenticity of the mission. So it's a quality check. Mm-hmm. And we discuss our libraries and how to preserve the collection, and also discuss how to disseminate, perhaps not just in English, but in some of the other European languages, which we have the capability to. So once a year I have to, and sometimes I go for longer time, sometimes shorter, but usually 8 months, and last 2 years I've been putting in 9 months in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you before we get into our subject, for those who are waiting, and it's going to be on prayer and change, what impact have you seen in your lifetime and in a sense the founding of the Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship and all of the work that you've been doing, especially in the areas of meditation and teaching and training and so forth, what impact do you see that it has had on the people and the planet itself, because when we start looking around, it doesn't seem like a whole lot has changed. Have you seen much, we'll call it positive change towards a healthier world?
Yes, the times are hard, and the times have been hard for a few years. Mm-hmm. But everybody has to do their part. If we don't believe that we can do good and be positive, then we will never even start the project and never even begin to offer what we believe in. And as part of the mission, we don't really proselytize. We like to be present and rooted in compassion, rooted in meditation. And we believe in the subtle power of the mind, that our positive thinking and our meditation and all the good wishes will percolate and permeate into the surrounding, and will bring about changes. And in the those who have been involved in the volunteering as well as through meditation have had incredible changes and very expected changes in their lifestyle. They have become a lot more mindful as well as healthful in terms of their living lifestyle, as well as what they stand for, how they interact. We cannot obviously change the world. We have to be the change ourselves that mm-hmm. we want to see. And so we just live by example and be prayerful that that everybody can believe in nonviolent communication and their spiritual perception and spiritual clarity and be mindful.
Mm-hmm. I've heard it said that those who are involved behind the scenes, and I see that a lot of what you're doing is sort of the behind the scenes work, the meditation and prayer and the contemplation, is sort of the glue that's been holding this world together, and that if you weren't doing this work, these wouldn't just be hard times. I mean, things would yes. be a lot worse than they are today.
Yes, you took the words which I would like to say, but at the same time, those who are meditators and those who are in the deep spiritual path, they don't like to claim or have a claim to fame.
Sure, sure.
So as a result, we don't like to say that, but it is true mm-hmm. that if those mystics, yogis, monks, nuns all around the world, if they stop their prayer and meditation, we would be in a much worse
yeah.
situation because... And you are right, though those are the behind the scenes glue that gives us the breathing room
yeah.
and thinking positive, and compassion is very, very important in these times.
And that leads us into our discussion about prayer and change. And somebody asked me when I was sharing with them this upcoming interview, was a, well, what are you going to talk about? I mean, and I said, well, and I listed off several different variations on those two words in combination and separately. And so I'll start out where I normally do. From your point of view, from your perspective, what is prayer?
Prayer is, in a very simple term, talking with the divine, talking with God. But it is... We have, as human beings, claim to innocence, not claim to ignorance. Mm-hmm. So in spiritual parlance, in spiritual teaching, we say innocence is bliss, ignorance is death-like. So we don't say ignorance is bliss, mm-hmm. innocence is bliss. So it's a heart's wish for the better, for a recognition that even though our physical abilities are limited, our mental abilities can connect us with the highest. And in that recognition, we can then start mentalizing, projecting our thoughts in a positive direction. And it is usually for a noble cause. It is usually to develop strength to be of greater value. So talking at a level where we can communicate within the realm of our faith, individual faith. If one is a cultivating faith that, okay, God exists and I want to talk to God, then that is a zone of innocence where we can then mentalize our thoughts and direct it to a form who we believe exists.
Mm-hmm.
So it's in a way a positive projection of our noblest wishes. Usually prayer is directed towards a resonant form with whom who feel we can communicate mentally. And even otherwise, simple wishes which are for the common good can be called a prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Asking for more worldly comforts is not to be deemed as a prayer, because prayer is after all held to be pious and full of sanctity, because it is the noble intent that is behind the prayer. So a noble and divine wish, which is when projected, is a prayer.
And that kind of answers the follow-up question, what isn't prayer? And you've done a fine job of explaining that. And I think that in my experiences over the years, I've seen a lot of people offering up a lot of prayers for a lot of things. Even circumstance. Now, and I'd bring that into the play too. Okay, I don't want any necessarily material things, but asking for a situation to go a particular way is still sort of asking for a material thing, isn't it? A material outcome.
Yes, but that won't be considered in the quintessential sense a prayer. A prayer is has a degree of nobility and sanctity about it,
mm-hmm.
because there is. And it is aimed at the ultimate good. It is usually not necessarily personal. I'll give you an example. Most of the peace chants,
mm-hmm.
in the Sanskrit literature, we work with them all the time. We use them for peace ceremonies. When we do special kind of invocations, we chant them. We recite them. The idea is that those sound then can permeate and percolate the surrounding and bring about change which is peaceful. So all those recitations, or you can call them mantra, they all are plural to us, to all of us, things like that. They are mm-hmm. not individual.
Right.
In other words, there is really no peace chant which you are asking, let I be peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
So let us be peaceful. Let us be mindful. So I would call that a prayer from a more stricter perspective, traditional perspective. And if there is a wish to change a situation, which then is of personal benefit, it can be called in a simple term a prayer, because after all, we are wanting something good to happen, but it is not the traditional perspective.
Mm-hmm. You may be familiar with something that I grew up with. Some people do see it as a meditation, but it is a recitation called the Rosary. And people will recite this sometimes throughout the day, whether they have the beads or not, the Rosary beads or not. And I'm wondering, that's not necessarily directing and asking for, you know, peace for us, you know, let us be at peace. It's offering up this meditation. What do prayers that don't necessarily, and I'm, of course, now I'm probably getting stuck into the words of the prayers. How important are the words within a prayer as opposed to like a mantra or along those lines, just reciting?
Traditional definition of meditation is that it's a repetition of one construct of syllables or words.
Mm-hmm.
So in the example you just gave is a meditation, because it's repeating almost spontaneously, by the time you get into a rhythm,
right,
the same word construct over and over again. Now, that's tremendous mental peace for the person who is doing it, but definitely it has a goal. It is directed at some higher being,
okay,
at a subtle being, and it is to bring about the higher purpose. So that is a prayer.
Okay.
So in that sense, a prayer and meditation is not really different, because a mantra would have the similar repetition of construct of Sanskrit words. So The heart doesn't really need a language. It is the intent and it is the music of the heart. It is the sound of the heart. And so in that sense, prayer and meditation are kind of same because it's repeating the same word construct throughout the day. Not only they will bring about higher mental clarity and mental capacity and mental power, but that brings about a very peaceful presence. And when they themselves become peaceful, the person who is doing the meditation or the prayer, the peace will permeate to everywhere mm-hmm. surrounding. And so it's an all-round win-win situation.
Yeah.
And that is definitely a prayer. The words usually are what define a prayer. If the words are noble and the words are praise of the Lord and the words are meditation of the Lord and the words are hymns of directed towards the Lord, that definitely fit the definition of the prayer.
So is the purpose of prayer initially and essentially to bring about that peaceful state in the prayer, the person who's praying?
Because if you yourself don't become the example, you cannot see the change yourself either.
Mm-hmm.
Not only can you not bring about the change, you will never know how to bring about the change because you do not know what it is like on the other side. So we must begin the change within ourselves. We must begin the after effect poise of being prayerful within ourselves rather than just wishing and relying. Of course, there is the application of higher faith. We surrender to the higher being and the higher power to bring about the change. But if we ourselves don't ever realize what is that state of communion, we won't be able to relate to it.
It's along the lines of, let there be peace on earth and let it begin with me.
Correct. Well, you have to first become the change that is the change from the prayer you are relating to. We must ourselves become the change before we can say, okay, here is the effect of the prayer, do it.
Mm. Okay. So, to be the effect of the change, if you will, and experience that, then we can
we can relate to it and
pass that on.
If we can pass that on, that's very good. But even otherwise, if we keep doing it, it will have its result because mind is essentially infinite and our mental peace and our good noble wishes will permeate.
Yeah. There are those who have used prayer from their perspective to alter events. I remember back in, I think it was the 1980s, I remember hearing a story of an evangelist who, because there was this huge hurricane heading towards their part of the country, said, we're going to pray and we're going to cause this hurricane to move. And I don't know if it was coincidentally, but it moved. Whether prayer had anything to do with it, who's to say? Is that a powerful prayer, or is that just a coincidence?
Well, even otherwise, that wish to protect is fine, is valid.
Mm-hmm.
So
that would be a noble...
That is definitely a prayer, and that is application of faith.
Mm-hmm.
And you must have faith that the prayer will work. We do healing work on various patients and those who are far away. We pray for their healing. And we don't go back and analyze whether it's the prayer which did it or something else did it. It's because it's in faith and in love, you don't analyze.
We do not dissect.
You just want to participate in the noble cause.
Yeah.
You just want to participate in the noble cause, and we just want to participate in the noble cause. So prayer has been known to work
mm-hmm.
long distance. It is the subtle capacity known as telepathy. It is the subtle power of the mind. And minds overlap, minds interact, and minds communicate. And we don't need always the physical sensory experience for communication. We can communicate through minds.
Mm-hmm. It's been said that there are three answers to prayer. Yes, no, and wait. Is that a valid position to take? Or when you put the prayer out there, don't have any expectations?
Yes, because the person who is praying is doing it with so much love and faith. They don't really, those who are really into prayer, they don't really wait for the result. They mm-hmm. just want to pray because they believe it is the right cause. to love and go for. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, affirmation is strengthened by seeing the result of the prayer and aligning with the cause. I agree. But those who really pray, they don't pray. They love the process of the prayer. They love the process of surrendering to the higher goal and higher cause. They love the divine communion. Mm-hmm. And they love the challenge of the meditation itself, which is repeating the prayer, the words of the prayer. And don't really wait for the result. Even if the result is not commensurate with the expectations, one should not alter the prayer, because then we are conditioning the prayer with the outcome. It is the process which is the joy of participation. It's like a service.
Mm. It's been said too that, quoting a Bible passage, seek ye first the kingdom of God, or communion with God, and all these things will be added. In other words, all your needs will be taken care of. You'll be at peace. It'll just be, in essence, sort of a wonderful life. But that sounds to me, from what we're talking, what you're talking about here, that sounds to me to be an internal peace and contentment, and life is good. Not necessarily, I'll have a big house to live in and a fancy car and all of these other outward material things. Because it seems to me that the interior life has even greater value in that context.
That is true, but at the same time, if there are collective prayers of similar nobility, it brings about massive changes in the energy. Mm-hmm. The whole energy shifts. You can go to a very holy place and feel the vibration, the energy, because there have been so many prayers done there. So why do you feel the shifted energy? Is because you can recognize something very holy and very pure because of the quality of the prayer, and then people come to sit for prayer there. So a meditation room feels very peaceful because of the quality of the prayer. And so we bring about massive changes in energy of the environment, energy surrounding us, by our collective prayers. So individual peace and collective peace are connected. In high-end Sanskrit philosophy, there is a saying that there is no collective consciousness, there is only collective ignorance. Sriyamsi Bahuvignani, that noble work and nobility is fraught with challenges and difficulties, because collective consciousness is not there, it's collective ignorance. So it must begin with an individual prayer. Mm-hmm. And then it builds the ambience and from collective prayer. So our communion with the divine, and if we are able to pray with faith in God, nothing like it.
Is there greater power in that collective prayer? In other words, the more people that we can get together to have that singular consciousness, that focus on what it is that we want to achieve, that there is no doubt, and then that would be the other aspect, that everyone praying must be without doubt. They must be assured that this will happen. We're praying for it. We're all unified. It will happen.
Yes, definitely collective wish and noble thoughts together can stave off great things. And there are various examples of even simpler events, not necessarily major events, but for example, graduation days, university graduation days, they become sunny because everybody is praying mm-hmm. that the weather is good for the outdoor graduation. And so there have been recorded that wishes have been have manifested. So we do manifest a reality based on our mental thought projection. Mm-hmm. So when we are noble and we are wishing for the best, definitely there are changes, because after all, everything has come out of everything. Evolution is all connected. So it's really about application of faith and how much we are able to what is the purity of the prayer?
When we continue, we're going to throw another element into the process, which you've sort of touched upon, and that's throwing change into the whole equation of prayer. You've already talked about us becoming, as the pray to say prayer is the wrong word, but the person offering up the prayer must become the change. That change must happen within them first. So we'll talk further about affecting change, whether we should be involved in that, whether there's a natural evolution and that our prayers are getting in the way of that, or if our prayers are part of the natural evolution of us as human beings, as spiritual beings. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with the spiritual founder of the Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship, Swami Vididhyananda, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you. Oh, won't you walk with me?
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and we're talking with Swami Vididhyananda. He is the spiritual founder of the Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship, and we are sitting here in his monastic home looking out over the ocean. You have a great view. I don't know how it is that folks of a spiritual nature with those types of wonderful aspirations and great works that you're doing happen to find the best location in real estate to have great views. It's remarkable, and I'm glad you've got it.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful place.
It's inspirational, yes.
Absolutely. And I know that each one of us has that kind of place that we can go to find inspiration, but also to find a place that's quiet, where we can pray and meditate. And I want to talk about the combination of those two, because we usually hear that phrase, prayer and meditation. And we're also going to get into the subject of change and what that means, and whether we should be in the habit of affecting change or even attempting to affect change. Are we interfering with the natural order of things, if you will? Or is the natural order for us to get involved and participate? Science fiction writers have written about non-interference when going to other planets and dealing with other civilizations and so forth, that they have a right to evolve. So I often wonder, you know, you have different states in the United States or different countries around the world. Don't they have a right to their self-determination? If they really want what it is they say they want, then who are we to interfere, either getting involved or maybe interfering by not getting involved when they ask us to? Let's talk about prayer and meditation. Why are those two so closely knit?
We touched upon earlier that the words of the prayer, when they are repeated as in a prayer, like you said, rosary bead, that is a kind of meditation. Because meditation word actually refers to ancient philosophies, especially Sanskrit-based philosophies, Sankhya and Yoga and Vedanta. They have what is known as dhyana or upasana. But it is really not different from the intent and purport of a prayer. When we are able to spontaneously repeat a very meaningful sound construct without interference, as if it becomes a single thought that is repeating itself, and it's recognized, and it's repeating, and it's recognized, and it's repeating, and there is the continuous flow, that is meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, meditation itself is the second stage of the concentration, which is three stages: attention, meditation, and absorption. So prayer, when we do rosary beads, which you alluded to earlier, is definitely meditation. So there is a broader definition and a more kind of accurate definition. So I would say most prayers, when they are done in a repetitive manner, in deep personal space of inner silence, and only a single prayer or construct of prayerful words are repeating, that is meditation. And meditation can be on the inner sound current, meditation can be on the inner light, but you have to hold that particular attention. So meditation definitely is a step in the process of concentration.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are definitely overlapping. There is, you know, we can use the word prayer in a broader way, but meditation is a more defined, constructive, structured way of looking at prayer.
Before we jump into change, is there a short phrase or verbal construct, if you will, that you can offer to those of us who are wanting to get into a meditative state so that we can better contribute, if you will, to the transformation of the energies, to pray and meditate more, if the word is more effectively, to feel as though we've actually, you know, done what it was that we wanted to do, and that is to offer up a noble and fervent prayer, to have gotten into that mindset of meditation. Is there a mantra of something that you can offer to us?
Yeah, there is a peace chant, which is a very short peace chant, which I will tell you. Om Bhadram No Apivataya Manah. Om Shantihi Shantihi Shantihi. So Bhadram No Apivataya Manah. Let us all imbibe the noblest thinking. Let noble thoughts come from all abound. And so that we can then direct our inner strength to the highest good. So let our mind be steeped in noblest of thoughts. So the idea is that the silence is the prevailing state and thoughts are coming into it, and then we actuate the thought. We don't run the mind. We focus on the thought power. And Om Shanti, 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 three times peace, to eradicate suffering, to bring peace and happiness. This is a simple one of the 10 peace chants which most of the monasteries in the Sanskrit tradition they use, one of the 10 peace chants.
Mm-hmm. Now you mentioned too that it's not so much the actual words that we speak, it's the intent of the heart.
It's the intent of the heart, yes.
And yet, is Sanskrit, if spoken, a more powerful verbal prayer than
because,
say, other languages?
There is something to it. The sound is all natural sounds, and it's a root language. It's mm-hmm. kind of the mother language. So when we verbalize Sanskrit, it has, since it has a synergy with the evolutionary checkpoints from the various aspects of sound and how the partitions of sound has come about, it is very powerful. It resonates deep within, and it permeates, the sounds permeate all around.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there is a particular intonation with which it has to be chanted. But a prayer can be just a silent wish, internal wish.
Mm-hmm. I resonate with a vision that one of my guests has for a new world, a new civilization, and some say, well, be careful what you pray for, if you will, or wish for, or ask for, because you may get it. And yet, I like his vision, and I wish it would happen today. And he has said to me, well, it won't happen in my lifetime, he says, and he's 94. And he says to me, and it probably won't happen in yours. And I'm 40 years younger than him, and I'm a little discouraged, thinking, no, I want it now, I want it now. And it's a peaceful place. It's a place where people can pursue their life's purpose, the reason that they are here, to achieve higher things than just consuming and producing and getting more stuff, and they're to help one another and to support one another. I mean, it's a wonderful vision that he has. Let's talk about changing the world. Now, you've stated that we as individuals can't actually change the world, and even collectively we can't, maybe in the context that I'm thinking. But we do change the world every day with our thoughts and with our actions.
No, we can definitely change. It starts with the individual.
Should we be doing that? And I go back to what I said before. I mean, isn't there sort of a natural order of things, and we should just let things flow the way they're flowing and just go along with it, as opposed to fighting it all the time? And
we can.
Is prayer any kind of a resistance to the way things are going in life?
Prayer has always been part of our part of the evolving life, part of evolution, because the power of thought is behind every action. So prayer has never been separated. It has been part of the evolution.
And it's not a resistance to.
No, but we, whatever we do, whatever we architect, has a thought behind it and has a will behind it. And the will is preconditioned from previous experience, but there is a will. And so the will to do, will to make it happen, is at the root of every creative aspect. Any creation, whether we you call everybody as individual creators, they have a will.
Mm-hmm.
And that will is always connected with the prayer. So, but to manifest positive changes so that we are more mindful and healthful, and we are more service-oriented, even though it's not a proper word, we can say service-full, then definitely it is the paradigm that you are asking, prayer and change. So from a meditation, from a spiritual point of view, we must ourselves be able to experience this change which we are hoping to achieve. And therefore, it's the individual where it begins. And ignorance is very powerful. Light of consciousness gets hidden. So to bring about, and the negative runs very quickly, rumor spreads in many directions, and good news is so difficult to share.
Yeah.
And so to turn the tide, the change must begin from the individual. And then it can become collective if everybody gets impacted from the power of that positivity. So where it will start? It will start from an individual. It cannot start out of thin air. Ultimately, it is up to the seer. So we can see the change. Ourselves can see the change. We are ourselves the witness of all actions. We are ourselves the witness of our shifting awareness. And we are ourselves the witness of our limitations and abilities. So we ourselves as seers, as the observer, we are always constant. That is why we can see the change. Otherwise, mm-hmm. we'll never register the change.
Right.
So when we change and recognize that we have effected a good change, we are for better, it gives us the strength to wish and pray and have those changes come about in a collective manner. So all from a meditation and spiritual perspective, we should bring about the change at an individual level. Then only we can faithfully make that happen in a collective level. That's all.
As the observer and the one offering up the prayers, and I use this as an analogy, if you will, I'm wanting to see some change. It doesn't matter what it is that I'm wanting to change, and I'm not seeing it, and I'm getting frustrated, and I'm getting dejected. That what's the point of me continuing to pray because I'm not seeing the change? And again, this is a person who is offering up the noble prayer. Okay, this is not for selfish means. They want to see change in the world. They want to see change in people, and they're doing everything they can, but they're not seeing it. Suggestions?
That is very good wish to happen, but this has not come about. What we are seeing around us, the incongruencies and the tumultuous events and the turbulences, it hasn't come about. It has built up over within the dimensions and rules of evolutionary changes that has been happening. So we have come to a point, everything seems to be falling apart.
Mm-hmm.
But what holds us together? What holds us together is the faithful prayer. So we must believe that life has a greater purpose, and within that greater purpose, it's absolutely valid to wish for that change you're talking about. Absolutely. There are various ways to make it happen. One is through meditation. One is through calling upon the divine and surrendering. And other is to bring those thoughts into some degree of action and serve.
Mm-hmm.
And that service is also very, very, very powerful. But sometimes the hands cannot help everywhere. So yeah. We have to only mentally offer the prayer. And we cannot be at many places and all over the place. But to wish that such tumultuous events do not happen and that we have all a greater peace and more peaceful life is definitely a very noble wish to always hope for. Hope is a very, very important aspect of the will.
Hope and faith. In a person's prayer life, is there sort of a... I mean, you've offered us a prayer, and anybody wants to download the audio of this program, they can listen to the mantra that you have given to us. Is there a sort of a best case scenario as far as prayer, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, or as long as it is earnest from the heart, noble, and so forth? Time is irrelevant.
Yes. We recognize our mental capacity, mind power, and the thoughts, because the thoughts are linked in time. So mind and time dimension are intricately linked. And so when we are very prayerful, or when we are spontaneously in meditation, we cannot recognize time, because it's a lack of change of that thought that makes us lose the sense of time.
Hmm.
Yes. So it's up to the individual. If they first prioritize and recognize the value of silence, of being prayerful, of repeating one thought, of that personal solace and personal space as being very important in participation and service, then prayer and meditation can be even 1 hour, 2 hours. Is there a magic time? There isn't. It's up to the individual.
Mm-hmm.
So even 5 minutes, stilling the mind and focusing on one thought is very difficult. But anything is possible with practice, and repetition of that 5 minutes will allow somebody to become spontaneous with 10 minutes. And so like that it builds. Many meditators, especially those who study with me, are happy with 1 hour. Some of them are doing for 2 hours, and some of them on weekends are doing for 3 hours. And then many who are beginners, they want to do just something simple for half an hour.
Mm-hmm. So it's all effective, though.
Yes.
And before we wrap it up here, I want to touch a little bit upon the aspect of the monastic life. There are times when I think, you know what, my life is just so crazy, it would just be nice to hold up in a hermitage somewhere and just pray and offer up prayers, and maybe, depending upon the type of monastery, spin the prayer wheel. But that's, I think, more escapism than it is genuinely wanting to go someplace and pray. Do you offer anything along those lines? Not necessarily a full lifetime monastic prayer life, but are there people that have come to you who have said, you know, I want to devote my life to prayer and meditation to help the world, to help humanity?
Again, that will require them to have the... to come upon the change themselves first.
Mm-hmm.
So it is not so easy, because if you are going into a secluded place and then worry about the world, that's not going to be very effective.
Yeah.
We can do our part wherever we are, in whatever way we can, and within the force and the momentum that has brought us to do that work. The values of service can be applied anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And within those values of service and the service paradigm, we can definitely do a lot. And there are great meditators in the householder life. And the highest communion is possible in the householder life. One does not have to become a monk to dedicate full time.
Mm-hmm.
And monks haven't come there all of a sudden. They have built upon a momentum of that particular secluded life with a long, long history behind it. But definitely everybody has to do their part, and it's an individual choice.
Right.
It's an individual choice, and there must be an inner calling. But to be serviceful, to be prayerful, and to do good and noble, and hand in hand and through powerful mental prayers and wishes, one can do it in wherever they are. It doesn't have to be some remote area away from it. Yes, natural surrounding and peaceful surrounding does make an impact. It gives us the initial push to sit in prayer and meditation, but one can train. One can train to overcome those external distractions anywhere.
The quote that keeps coming to mind as you share this is that God lives among the pots and the pans. So it doesn't matter where you are, you can pray. Swami Vididhishananda, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
And thank you again for this Easter interview, and I wish all the best for all the listeners of this program.
And we look forward to coming back again next year and continuing our dialogue.
Thank you very much.
And I'm Richard Dugan. We are again talking with Swami Vididhishananda, spiritual founder of the Self-Inquiry Life Fellowship. And we encourage you to check out the website as well and find out about schedule of events. Swami will be speaking throughout the Central Coast, or maybe in another state where you might be traveling to, and you can find out more information. I'm Richard Dugan for Tell Me Your Story. Until next Saturday, love to Lal.